Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
No, it's true. I used to work at the station, and this guy would always come and he'd stare through these windows while people were in their studios.
Damn.
He thought they were saying terrible things about his mother.
Hello, listeners. I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's show, we'll be getting more information about the latest haunted attraction here in Salt Lake called the Fear Factory. We'll be going into the archives with an interview with the Melvins. We'll check out the latest with Utah Arts Alliance's Connect event and do the daily calendar rundown with the Stare, and preview two of the three bands you'll hear at this month's Localized. Salt Lake City, and maybe even all of Utah, has what some might call an unhealthy relationship with haunted attractions. And there's a new one downtown. It just opened up on September 30th. It's called Fear Factory. The project took over an old cement factory at 666 West, 900 South, underneath I-15. They've got a younger staff, as well as graffiti artists they work with, to redesign and decorate the entire complex. Megan Kennedy recently sat down with Fear Factory organizer Cannon Nappas before it opened.
Inspired you guys to do such a massive undertaking, and how did you get started with this project?
Well, I got started from the project just kind of by accident. Bob Dunfield, basically, pioneered haunts in Utah back in the 1960s. He started his first one in his neighborhood and ran March of Dimes for 15 plus years. And they bought the property in December of last year. And I know the Dunfields. Just family friends, and I train at their gym, and just during training, Bob's son, he showed me some of their photos that they had and videos of this place, and he would tell me about their haunt. And, for a while, it was just kind of like, okay, you guys are starting a haunted house, okay. Then I'm interested in video editing and things, so I did a video for them, and they liked it, and I've just kind of been getting my feet deeper and deeper since then.
And are you a family man? And if so, what do your families think about you undertaking this project?
I am a family man. I have no family of my own, but I live with my grandparents and I take care of them. So really it's kind of a perfect opportunity for me. So I just give them care and I'm able to do that and still work from home on the computer. So they're really excited for me, and my grandpa is really excited to see that I have something good going on.
That's fantastic. Where do you guys get your creative inspirations from for your horrors besides the movies? Is there any specific source?
Well, in every man's dreams lies a nightmare, or something like that. We have so many creative minds on the project that it really hasn't been much of a problem. Like someone always has a great idea. Bob is full of ideas and what he wants done, and he's delegated some of that responsibility out, and everyone's just really showcasing their abilities on the project.
How big is your creative team, would you say, right now, that are working on fitting, this area is for werewolves and this area is for ghosts? Like, who's doing all that?
I couldn't tell you. We have so many people on the property right now. We've had to bring in some construction crews and really make a good final push this last month. So really, it's a total group effort. We've got guys who are doing foam sculpturing in there, and of course, Kier doing all the painting, and then you got the guys building the haunt and the walls, and it's a team effort.
Tell us a little bit about working with Kier Deathstar, who did your murals outside and a lot of the artwork within the haunted house. How was it working with him, and how'd you guys hook up? How'd you get him on the project?
It's been great working with Kier. He's a true talent. I think we just, luck of the draw, came across him. One of the kids we had working with us and helping us out had recommended him, and he turned out to be, one of the greatest of all time in my eyes. I used to live down here just about 13th West in Indiana, and so I would drive past a wall that he would paint on a great deal of the time, and it's right over there on Genesee Avenue across from the Animal Summit. And so I knew of his work. I never knew his name, but I knew who that guy was, and just kind of luck of the draw we came across him. But he's really showcased his skills for sure.
The surprises, can you tell us about what some of the delights that your visitors can expect when they come here?
Our guests can expect be transported to another place that's, I mean, the whole property is haunted, and it's not a warehouse haunt. Like, we have we've really got a large property, and you're kind of transformed into that area as soon as you're on the property. Fans are just really, really gonna have their hands full when they come and check our haunt out.
And so that I hear there's underground tunnels because of the cement factory, and you're using that existing space. What kind of insanity are you putting down there?
We've got the haunt. The haunt begins at an underground tunnel, and we had some paranormal investigators out here a few weeks back, and that was one of the areas that something was going on. I don't know what it was, but I was there, and there was definitely something creepy about that area. So you start off right in the depths of it. You'll go through the tunnels, winding in and out. You'll go up four floors, across some giant skyways. It's a diverse area.
And so the paranormal guys, did they get anything on like film or tape? And who was there a particular society that you guys got to come out?
Yeah, we had a group called Tipa Research come out, and they had a whole trailer set up with the flat screen in the back that had access to all nine of their cameras that they had set up. They had sound equipment. We're still in the process of getting it. I saw some of the footage yesterday, and you know, they get responses from these entities that are here. I'm not willing to say that they're ghosts or that they're this person or that, but there's definitely something going on here.
Has your crew run into anything?
Our crew has definitely experienced some strange things. Just simple things as far as tools, you know, jumping around and kind of hiding from them, and there's been activity, especially down in the tunnel.
That's scary. Do you have a history with just haunted houses in general, just of course liking them? What are your or the most common complaints about haunted houses, and what is Fear Factory doing to kind of alleviate and avoid those pitfalls?
I'm new to the whole haunt scene. You know, I really just kind of fell off. I maybe went to one of the newer haunts, but the last haunt I remember was the Old Mill. You know, it was just such a great property. You know, that's what I remember as a haunt, is being, you know, outside, inside, up, down, and we really deliver that on this property.
So as opposed to that warehouse feel where it's just kind of a lateral path almost, and there's not really a whole lot of diversity in it, you're just kind of going with the different.
Yeah, I mean, we just have such a more diverse property to explore with the heights and the underground tunnels, and it's not a knock on anyone, it's just that's what we have, and I think it's an exciting feature.
Can local horror buffs find work or volunteer work at Fear Factory once it opens?
Yeah, we're currently looking for volunteers to come out and help with acting, and we're really open to all people who want to help and come out and be involved with the project. So they can just contact us through our website.
Okay. Any specific show looking for, like certain ages, certain backgrounds, makeup artists, maybe costume guys?
We're looking for talented people, really. We want the most talented makeup artists and actors and people who really want to be part of a team. You know, we don't want people to feel like they have to be here. We want people who want to be here every night, and I think that'll lead to us putting on a quality show.
The Fear Factory is currently open for group tours, with plans underway to be open year-round. For more details on hours and pricing information, check out their website, fearfactoryslc.com. YYBS is an alternative indie band from Salt Lake City. They've spent most of 2011 playing small shows and recording their EP at Midnight Records. Here's June Bug off their new self-titled EP. YYBS will be the opening group for this month's Localized on Friday, October 14th. The show is also going to serve as the band's album release show, and they'll have copies of their new EP on hand. Last year, Gavin Hoffman had a chance to talk with Dale Crover of The Melvins about their latest album, The Bride Screamed Murder. The Melvins influenced guys such as Soundgarden, Green River, Nirvana, Tool, and Boris. Now here's Gavin Hoffman speaking with Dale about The Melvins.
Playing with The Melvins, that was kind of your first foray into playing more punk rock type stuff?
Pretty much, you know. Which was great for me because my other bandmates always told me that I played way too fast, which I did. So when I joined the Melvins, it was like, oh yeah, I'll play it faster. You know, great, perfect. Perfect for a 16-year-old kid who's so wired out. So.
Is that kind of how, I guess if you want to call it, your style developed? Was it just a natural thing, or was it out of necessity or anything? Because, I mean, you're kind of a notorious hard hitter.
Yeah, well, I mean, that style definitely developed with playing with the metal. You know, I was already into heavy metal, and when I joined the band, that's the kind of drummer that they wanted to get. It was like a heavy metal drummer.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was perfect. Somebody that pounded the drums. You know? Yeah, it pretty much developed from playing with those guys.
So were there any... I mean, in terms of actual playing style, in terms of, you know, hitting hard, things like that, were there any, you know, obvious, I guess, influences on the drums that you kind of, you know, paid attention to what they were doing? I mean, obviously, you know, comparisons to Bonham, things like that.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, when I joined the band, I was more into, like, that Judas Priest record.
Right.
You know, Iron Maiden, stuff like that. All those bands had pretty heavy drummers.
Yeah.
So... You know, it was pretty natural. And then when I heard things like Black Flag, you know, they were playing heavy but with less heavy metal influence.
Right.
Black Flag. I mean, those guys, well, I mean, I guess their drummers were certainly more punk rock in style, but, you know, it was obvious that, like, those guys were into, like, certain things of heavy metal.
Right.
Certain aspects. As were we, you know. We liked heavy metal, but without all the stupid stuff about it. You know?
Right.
Mostly the singing and lyrics and things like that, and mm-hmm. you know, sans guitar solos too. You know, we weren't really into like big, long, wheedly sounding guitar solos. It was directed to the point, not all the bullshit.
Right. Which shows through on, you know, pretty much all the Melvins records. I mean, they get consistently weirder, but...
Yeah. Well, now we're not afraid of guitar solos.
Right.
Maybe it's just that Buzz couldn't play any guitar solos before, and now he can.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, he's certainly got his own style anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't sound like any other guitar player to me.
No, not at all. I would agree with
and
that, definitely.
I think he's very underrated as a guitar player.
I mean, it was just a few years ago. What prompted the Melvins to go to two drummers?
Because we didn't need two drummers.
Because
why?
What?
We did it.
Because
we didn't need to do it.
So that's why you did it?
For us to have two drummers, so that was all the reason for us to. We fired our bass player, yet again. Had to go through another bass player change.
Right.
And we played with the big business guys a few times up in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
When we were thinking of who to get, I thought of Jared, actually. Well, my wife actually thought of Jared. She thought, you know, for a long time and thought he'd be good in the band. And when I mentioned it to Buzz, he's like, oh, we should get both of those guys. And we had talked about doing a two-drummer fitting for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that was in the back of our heads. And it just kind of happened to work out, you know?
So do you each write, you know, your own parts? I mean, because there are, you know, there are parts that you're both on time with each other, and then parts when you go off and do something or Cody goes off and does something.
Yeah. We pretty much write our own parts. I mean, you know, I let him do whatever he wants, more or less. But, you know, then we write parts together, too. It's great. I mean, he'll come up with stuff that I wouldn't think of normally, and, you know, vice versa. So, you know, I think that's really cool and important. Even with bass players, you know, like when we're learning old songs, you know, we're like, okay, here's the guideline for it, but, you know, you don't have to play it exactly like it is on the record. You know,
right.
Do your own thing. So, which makes sense, you know, if you're going to hire somebody because you like the way that they play, that they should do their own thing.
Absolutely.
So, and, you know, same with Cody, too. You know, I mean, I'd played with other drummers before. Like, we'd actually done a thing with Fantomas.
Uh-huh.
Which is the band that Buzz is in with Mike Patton.
Right.
We did like a combo of both bands called the Fantomas and all the big bands where I was playing along with Dave Lombardo. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, you know, I mean, I knew that you could play with two drummers, that worked no problem. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of messed around before with other drummers too, just like playing together, but probably the Fantomas thing was probably the first time actually doing something like that where it was like a live performance or whatever. Actually, you know what? That's not true. we did a tour in 1999, different opening bands on the tour, and we would make the opening band's drummer play on the first song with us. I can't remember why we decided to do that. Maybe it was because I think that the song that we were playing was a song called Amazon.
Uh-huh.
I had recorded two drum parts of that, so I would whoever was opening play the other drum part.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's really simple. So, yeah. You know, something that we've done before, but you know, certainly we practice a lot doing trying to get stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think we've gotten really good at it. You know, I mean, it's way more comfortable than it was before. And not that it wasn't before, but I think we're just more comfortable with each other, you know,
right?
Playing style and all that. So it's just, it makes it easier,
right? Your feet touch ground. Just in terms of the band, in terms of the overall Melvin thing, what do you kind of attribute to the longevity? I mean, you guys have been around for a long time and aren't going anywhere, and I mean, you've outlasted 18 million other bands, and yet you still, you know, are out there touring, making new records, and people are getting turned on to you guys every day. What do you kind of attribute to that?
Well, the alternative, if we quit, then we'd be, you know, I couldn't even get a job at McDonald's at this point. I don't even have a full high school education. What the fuck am I going to do? You know?
Right.
I remember what it was like to work, a real job, you know? So, you know, I don't want to do that. No way. I don't know. We get along very well. It's easy enough to get along. The only problem we really have is with bass players. It's mostly their own personal problems.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you guys found you've got a pretty solid lineup now.
I think so, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
Those guys might change their minds and decide not to play with us, or they might become hideous junkies and
Skid Row, and then we'll have to kick them out.
So it's kind of a never say never thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know. But I mean, it's kind of funny because at the same time, Buzz and I have done shows as a duo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even recently we did something in
right.
In
you Denver. Went to Denver with Warlock Pinchers.
Yeah, I ended up playing drums with the Warlock Pinchers too.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, because they erased their drum machine 18 years ago, and I stupidly offered to play drums with them 18 years ago, and
they took me
off on my offer 18 years later.
Oh shit.
It was really fun, but you know, the three places that those guys are popular were Denver, Boise, and Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's kind of weird that the Melvins actually exist in three different forms, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
There's the big business lineup, you know, Buzz and I playing as a duo, which mm-hmm. I guess we've called Melvins Light.
Right.
I wanted to call it the 2-bit Melvins. Yeah, I guess we haven't done it for a little while, but we sometimes play with Trevor Dunn. Usually when the guys from big business are busy touring or doing something on their own, we've often booked other shows with him playing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's been a little while, but I guess about, just a little over a year ago, we did a tour. We played with Trevor.
Uh-huh.
Actually, you know what? And there's one more version of the Melvins, too. We did, the tour was the original band opening up, well, almost original. The original drummer played drums, and I played the part of Matt Lucan and played bass.
Okay.
And then Buzz and I played as a duo, and then Trevor Dunn came out, and we played the entire Houdini record.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So there's four different versions of the Melvins floating around.
It just kind of depends on the time of year or what day it is or something.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
That was Slug staff writer Gavin Hoffman speaking with Dale from the Melvins for an article he wrote back in October 2010. You can check out more from that interview on the website. How did you think that interview went back when you did it? So long ago, you don't even remember.
So long ago that I don't even remember, yes. It actually went really well. Dale was really easy to talk to. He was just he was really forthcoming about, pretty much anything I asked him, he was willing to answer, and he had a lot of really cool things to say, actually.
Which must have been great for you because you used to be, well, you still are a Melvins fan.
Right.
You started back in the mid-90s.
Early to mid-90s, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when I first heard the Melvins.
And now you'll still listen to them, but you have an interesting pattern. Will you explain that for us?
I'll do my, as you would say, Melvins binges. So I'll have a couple of days where that's pretty much all I listen to is the Melvins. And then after those couple of days, I'm pretty much done for 6 months to a year.
But you still like their back catalog?
Oh, absolutely. They put out some of the best records. Back catalog wise with any band that I know of, and especially for the stuff that they were doing in the late 80s and early 90s were way ahead of their time and very, very underappreciated.
And did you like their last album, The Bride Screamed Murder?
I did, but as has been with the case with the Melvins for maybe the last three or four records, they tend to be really, really good, but they also tend to experiment a lot, and it's really hard to kind of get your head around if you're not really expecting it, I guess. So they're definitely grow records that grow on you, I guess, and Bright Screen Murder did take a while to grow on me, but it finally did, and I do actually really like the record.
And what was the most interesting thing that you learned when you were speaking to Dale about the Melvins?
I thought his recollection of the Indian Center, the old Indian Center here in Salt Lake City, and his explanation of that situation and staying in the warehouse actually overnight was pretty intriguing, actually, that he had such a vivid memory of that coming directly from Salt Lake, that and the memories he had of playing Speedway.
And that is eloquently put in your article, if I can say that. Is that an appropriate way to describe it? Are you eloquent, Gavin?
No, I'm far from eloquent.
Well, the last paragraph on the article you wrote has a longer explanation about the Indian Center memory, so I would recommend reading that if you're interested. And thanks, Gavin. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
Time yet again to do another weekly calendar rundown with Esther. We like to highlight different events that take place in Salt Lake City. You can find it in the back of the magazine, or you can find it on slugmaggot.com. There's a handy bar on the right side that has everything that's going on in the day. And also, with that same knowledge, Esther Moreno. How you doing, Moreno?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Great. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us for another edition.
You're welcome. It's always the highlight of my week.
Well, we've got an exciting week coming up. I'm excited for the October 12th show at the Urban Lounge. Radio Moscow is going to be playing. Have you ever seen those guys before?
I haven't, but I think it's interesting that it's Radio Moscow, but they're from Iowa.
Isn't that
Is that colloquially ironic or is that straight up ironic? It's ironic.
Have you seen them play?
Yeah, they're very good.
Cool. So I should go.
Yeah, you'll definitely have a good time. You should go to that as well. And what's coming up on that Friday of that week, October 14th?
Localized with the Suicycles, Long Distance Operator, and YYBS.
Quite a lineup.
Yes, it is.
Good job. Somebody made a poster.
Robin Banks made a poster.
Robin Banks, of course. And Saturday, October 15th, I'm going to let you try to tackle that one. There's a concert at 2 p.m. at Memory Grove.
It's not a concert.
What is that, then?
It's an alley cat.
That's not a Kopchakovsky cat.
It's the Kopchovsky cat. It's actually named after the first woman who biked around the world.
Are you making that up?
No, I'm not. I wrote about it in my column.
Well, it's good you're having a race there, because there's no music venue at Memory Grove. Well, it's not really a race.
Yeah, it is a race.
I thought alley cats were like...
It's like a scavenger
hunt. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's not typically
race.
A race. I mean, that's a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, but you have to go to all the stops and get to the end first.
That's the definition of a scavenger hunt, not a race. Race is pretty much not... You know what? It's just a alley cat all by itself. How about that?
All right.
Something unique and totally different than anything else.
And this one's super different because it's just for women.
Thus, the women's alley cat and the name of the female racer.
Mm-hmm.
Thus.
Yeah.
And Saturday, October 15th, that same day, that very same day, something else is happening at Kilby Court. Are you a fan of hip-hop?
Sometimes.
Is that a question? I don't... Can't answer a question with a question.
I like poetry.
Well, I've got some good news. Is there the African-American community in New York in the 80s invented poetry with beats, and they called it hip-hop, and that's going to be taking place at Kilby with Greaves, Budo, the MC Type, and Prof. Prof?
Prof.
What the hell kind of name is that?
No.
Is there a period in there?
No, it's just said Prof.
Well, that guy can do poetry if any of them can, because he's obviously well-educated.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't say PhD, though.
Good point. Maybe he's just an adjunct. Maybe he's not. He's not getting his graduate degree. Hey, well, thank you, Esther. Do you want to tell the people about the app?
Yeah. Go on iTunes? Is that where you get it? I don't ever listen to this part.
Yeah, you get it on iTunes. You never listen to the end of your awesome segment? We talk about the app all the time.
I know.
You know what? We'll just edit that in post. We'll just take that out in post, guys. Good. I never listen to this. Fantastic, Esther. Now we both have egg on our face. That's cool. Well, hey, it was a good job. Well, it lasted. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And have fun when you go out of town.
Thanks.
Local musician Camden Chamberlain has been known as a hard-working musician and seemed recently off his band Cave Dolls breakup. He formed a new group called the Suicycles. They released 2 EPs, a full-length album, 2 music videos, and started a show on Utah FM all within the first 6 months of 2011. Here is Speaking in Tongues off their new album Sex, Drugs, and Death. Yeah.
To hear more from their new album, check out The Suicycles when they close out Localized after Long Distance Operator this Friday, October 14th at the Urban Lounge. Tickets, as usual, are just $5 at the door, and the concert starts at 10 p.m. For more info on The Suicycles, check them out at thesuicycles.com. In 2011, the Utah Arts Alliance started Connect, which is a monthly event held for artists and art enthusiasts. It was originally conceived as a meet and greet to showcase select pieces from artists' repertoires and for people to vote for their favorites of the evening. The event happens every second Friday of the month, and it's completely free for the public to attend. Now here's Gallery Stroll columnist Mariah Mellis speaking with Derek Dyer about Connect.
You've got a lot of stuff going on, Derek. I mean, you've got several galleries, you've got shows coming up every month, you've got a new kind of social networking. Why don't you give me a little update on what the Arts Alliance is up to these days and where what we can catch this coming month?
We do have a lot of stuff going all of the time. Our mission is fostering the arts in Utah in all forms, and so it's quite a broad and expansive mission, and because of that, we have to do a lot of different things. We do have three locations in Salt Lake. We have the Utah Arts Alliance Gallery on 127 South Main Street. Also in that center is our recording studio, Utah Arts Alliance Midnight Records, where we have a full service sound recording studio and record label. We also have Graywall Gallery on Pierpont Avenue, 351 West Pierpont Avenue. So sort of a gallery co-op type of thing. We have group shows there and theme shows. And then we also have the Utah Arts Alliance Center for the Arts, which is 2191 South, 300 West, and that's kind of a community art center. We have 8 private artist studios where we provide space for artists and nonprofit groups. And then we also have an 8,000 square foot center that is used for performance, rehearsals, all sorts of dance classes, and special events, things like that.
That's wonderful. With so many locations, I know you have a lot going on. What do you see at each one, or what's coming up this next month at each one?
Okay, so every month at the 21st South Space, we have Connect, which is always the second Friday of each month, from 7 to 9 p.m. We invite artists to come and show their work. You can bring up to 3 pieces in any medium, and this gives artists an opportunity to mingle with other artists and also the community, show their work, and then everyone that comes gets to vote on their favorite pieces. At the end of the year, we take the top artists from each month, invite them back in December for the finale showcase of the year, and the top 3 artists that receive the most peer review votes for that month receive grant funding from the Utah Arts Alliance.
So does an artist need to let you know? Do they just show up? Like, if you wanted to be in that group or considered and want to show on that in a month leading up to December, how would you go about doing that?
You can just show up. Try to get there as close to 7 or maybe a little bit earlier if possible. We have tables and different easels and things set up for people to display their work on. We give each piece a number, and therefore the participants in the event can just mark a ballot showing what their favorite pieces are. We started this program as a way to fulfill a need in the community for artists to be able to feel as though they're part of the community and the larger community, and then also as a vehicle for us to provide peer review grants. This is a program that no one really provides right now, and in looking at the best way to do that, we came up with this method as the best, most fair way to do a peer review grant process.
I love that, and I didn't realize that nobody else was doing anything where your peers could actually vote and get money. And does the grant have to be used in a particular way? What are the parameters on the grant?
No, it's a cash grant. You know, our hopes are that the artists use those to produce new work, get more education, or, you know, it's really up to them, you know, what they do with it.
Who's going to be speaking? Because the evening's centered around the art, and then it's centered around an artist giving a little talk, brief talk, more socializing than it is actually a lecture series. But Do you have anybody scheduled already for October, or who can we expect to see?
Yeah, so every month we have a special guest speaker. This is a way we kind of thought of being able to kind of draw the event into a center during the middle of the event. So at 8 o'clock at night, everyone comes in, sits down, and we have a special guest speaker that talks for about 10-15 minutes about their experiences and their medium. Every month we have a theme, and typically the guest speaker talks about their work. And so we've had many different great artists. Rachel Domingo was last month. We've had Renee and Todd Keith talking about photography. We've had Anthony Granato talking about painting, Kat Palmer talking about photography. So a lot of amazing artists that have achieved, you know, greatness in one form or another in their medium have talked. And we actually have a couple feelers out there for who's going to be talking next month, but I don't have a confirmed answer.
Okay,
on that one,
so that's
right
one
now.
Of those that if you check at the Alliance's website, would you be able to find out who October's Connect speaker is going to be?
Yeah, you can always learn about what's going on by going to utaharts.org. You can also friend us on Facebook, and we update that with the theme and the speaker each month.
Let's go back over to Graywall. Now, that's a kind of a satellite gallery for the Arts Alliance, right? And I know that they had a fabulous zombie show scheduled for September. What do they have booked for October?
The October show is going to be really fun. It's a pinup theme show, so it's everything that has to do with pinup, 50s style art and things like that. We're going to have a bunch of classic cars also on display, artworks within themselves, and the gallery will be presenting paintings, photography, sculpture, all things pinup. So it'll be a fun, sassy, sexy little show. So I definitely stop by and check that out for sure.
That's wonderful. And then let's head over to the downtown location at 27 South Main. So it's Renee and Todd Keith showing their horror-themed ghostly imagery. And just tell me a little bit more about them and about what we might be able to see there.
Renee and Todd Keith are probably two of the best photographers in the state as far as, you know, my personal opinion. They're a couple. They're married. They work really well together. They're amazing because not only do they take amazing photographs, but they also do the makeup on many of their pieces. They create backdrops. They paint backdrops. They build sculptures and props and things like that that go into the backdrop. So it's a really, it's not just that they go out and take a picture of something that they find interesting, but they actually create the images, much like a painter would compose a painting or something like that. Very amazing work. Their last show that we had at the gallery about 2 years ago won Artie's Award for Best Photography Exhibit. That was a body painting exhibit, and this exhibit is going to be very timely with the season. It's ghosted, and it's going to be kind of a spooky, sort of scary, fun show that will be perfect in time for Halloween.
That's wonderful. And also, they are going to be showing at an October evening on October 27th there at the Masonic Temple. Mm-hmm. They were part of the multimedia evening last year, and will also be showing and doing some photography and kind of a set design artistic pieces again for this year. So we're really excited to be able to see them in two locations this October. So that's wonderful. On the horizon that we need to mark on our calendars now?
Yes, the next big things that are coming up will be November 5th. The Utah Arts Alliance is co-presenting a production with the Grand Theater. It'll be at the Grand Theater at the Salt Lake Community College on State Street. This is called the Big Small World Show. We have nine different acts that represent different cultures around the world. So we're going to take you on a trip around the world through music and dance, and it'll be a show unlike any other in Utah right now. A very fun show and very affordable tickets, so everyone can come.
Nice. And do you get tickets ahead of time, like on a website, or do you buy them there?
Yes, you can visit the Grand Theater website. I believe grandtheater.org. We'll also have a link from utaharts.org to that box office link. You can also buy them in person at the box office at the Grand Theater at the Salt Lake Community College.
The This month, Connect will be partnering with an October evening to present works from married photography duo Renee and Todd Keith. The next Connect takes place Friday, October 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the UAA building, which is located at 2191 South, 300 West, Suite 1B. The horror show exhibit at the Art Alliance will show from October 3rd to the 29th. The sixth annual in October evening is a multimedia art showcase taking place October 27th at the Masonic Temple. For more information on the UAA and this event, check out their website, utaharts.org. The United States has recently seen an uptick in organized protest marches and occupations. The Occupy Wall Street movement is known as the first 98 or 99% protest group. New York's protesters have been occupying since September 17th and haven't budged since. Their sit-in has been steadily inspiring similar movements across the country in 52 major cities, places like Washington, D.C., Portland, and now Salt Lake City. Websites like OccupyTogether.org and myriad Occupy Twitter groups' Twitter accounts are spreading in notoriety, enough to alert local activists at least. Salt Lake City planned its Occupy movement to coincide with other national groups on October 6th and received a growing crowd after their downtown march. It started at the Capitol building and continued downtown past financial offices and remained in its occupying spot of Pioneer Park. Protesters provided several different reasons for their occupation, but they all seemed to agree that the system had failed them.
All day, all week, Occupy Salt Lake!
All day, all week,
Occupy Salt Lake!
All day!
What do you think about the movement so far, the protest today?
You know, I'm really excited. We had a really big turnout, especially for the rain. You know, so it's really inspiring to see people working with democracy and using it for what it is, not for corporations, but for people.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people here. And you guys started at the Capitol and you marched down State Street, is that correct?
We marched down State Street and looped around to some of the financial buildings here, like the Federal Reserve Building, Goldman Sachs. I don't believe we hit up Merrill Lynch today, but also Wells Fargo, Chase Bank, things like that.
Our grievances transcend gender, race, religion, and politics, and it's true, because unless you're the few select people or institutions that have gained most of the economic and political power in the last few decades, then you have been affected. The 99% of the people in the country have been disenfranchised and ignored in the political and economic process. And if we could just have our voice heard again in politics and economics, that would be an excellent start. And a lot of people are saying, you know, what is your exact platform? Well, until our voice can be heard again, we can't even have a platform. Hopefully, this will help people, help politicians, business leaders, and the other people who shape our lives realize that the 99% of us on the bottom are not a profit center for the 1% on the top.
Do you think these groups will ultimately be able to succeed?
Absolutely. I think there's been too many people that have had these same sentiments, these same emotions, the same frustrations for too long. And now that it's starting to organize, I think you're going to see them coming out from all kinds of communities. You know, the east side, the west side, up north and down south. You know, I think they'll join in and you'll see a lot of people coming to express their feelings and emotions they've been experiencing for the last year or two. I've seen homeowners and consumer advocates come to the table, and I've seen them face challenges of not being able to get anybody to listen to them from financial institutions and banks. And my only conclusion is they're comfortable with the status quo and don't want to do anything different. And so I saw this group marching and knew that this is what it would take to effectuate the change that is needed. This is going to be a revolution. This is not something that's going to go away. I know from the people that I've worked with and the things that I have heard over the last year that this affects everybody, you know, college students to attorneys to teachers to school bus drivers. You know, a lot of people hurt right now. A lot of people have reached out to try and take accountability for their lives, but cannot get a response back. And you're gonna hear that and you're gonna see that, and they're gonna come out, and I think they're gonna join in this march and this movement.
Where can people find out more information about the movement?
If you go onto OccupySLC.org or search OccupySLC on Facebook, those are our two main sources for people to find out any breaking information or to come and join us.
Though the day of the protest in Salt Lake City received the coldest and wettest weather to date in 2011, it still received a big turnout with even bigger numbers expected as Salt Lake residents get used to the new fall weather. For more information about the local movement, visit OccupySLC.org. Thanks for listening to Sound Waves from the Underground. For more info about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, go to slugmag.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything really, send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com. Or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our show's theme and music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design by T. Doan. Technical design by Kate O'Connor with audio mastering from Andrew Glassett. Special thanks to Adam Sherlock and Eric Tomorrow for their help and support. Make sure you catch next week's episode when we talk to hip-hop artist Evidence, listen to an archive interview with Dead to Me, and get more information about a poetry slam called Put Your Mouth Where the Word Is. We'll see you next time.